Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay? Unique New York. Unique New York. So, hey, welcome to Tonya World Presents. I'm recording from an undisclosed location right now, and I'm using my mask as a little bit of a pop filter. This is not a playoff preview, but I am away from my computer, so some of the high production values that you've come to enjoy, we're going to have to leave that aside for the time being. But I had a couple of thoughts, and we'll just see how the old Anchor works with actually recording to the phone. So if this sounds terrible, no, you'll be the first to know. Got a lot of positive feedback from the Tom O'Grady episode. Appreciate everyone who shared that. I found out that showed up on the front page of Brew Hoop. Just a really good interview, I thought. And so kind of what I want the podcast to be and to exist as is a maybe weekly, maybe bi-weekly thing. Just when I have something to say, or if I can book a good guest, or if somebody wants to come on and talk about the Bucks. Something that's a little bit more of a treat that hopefully people look forward to. The Bucks season recap video. Man, I'm just not happy with it right now, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to play around with it. I will say that one segment that is completed is so great that I almost, if nothing else, I'll put this out just by itself. So I have one kind of area locked down. But again, I'm still struggling with this weird season. I mean, because really, what's the narrative of this season? Right? What's the narrative of this season? Like, some seasons, a narrative quickly emerges and it's kind of nice. And so last season, perfect example. Last season, the Bucks start out 8-0 or 7-0 or whatever it was. And then we have the stretch of 500 balls. So that's kind of the adversity. Then the team overcomes the adversity. Then there's some fun stuff with the All-Star game. Then everybody kind of gets hurt, but then they have a few magical wins. Cut print, right? This season, I'm kind of struggling with how much weight I want to put on the 2-2 start. I personally feel like the 2-2 start is emblematic of some other problems we're going to have to worry about. But, you know, at the end of the day, was anybody really up in arms about the 2-2 start? So then the other thing you can do is play with the timeline a little bit, which I think I'll have to do. There were certainly all these kind of bad losses sprinkled in with all the dominance. But I mean, I don't even know. But at a certain point, the Bucks were what, 51-8? Something close to that, 50-8, 52-8, you know, so you have that aspect right off the bat, right? That it was an incredibly successful season for a lot of it. And then you have the COVID stoppage, you have the Kobe Bryant stuff, you have all the vulture talk. So I'm going to play with the timeline a little bit. The parts, I think it'll be another excellent, hopefully, video that people enjoy when it's all said and done. But it's really hard right now to kind of get something that's satisfying, because at the end of the day, you want the video to be satisfying. Did this season, neither the regular season in March or the bubble restart, have finished in a satisfying way? On the other hand, I'm not done yet. So, you know, nothing barring a catastrophic injury is going to come out of the Magic series. The Bucks are going to win the Magic series in 4 or 5 games. And so hopefully then better things, and then the playoffs start for us. So I have no problem. We'll probably actually do, I was thinking about getting some to my actual friends together. Maybe we'll do an actual playoff preview. But this the Bucks don't start the playoffs in the first round. The second round is where the Bucks start the playoffs. But yeah, the O'Grady episode, by far the number one in downloads and listens so far, knocking Adam McGee out of the number one spot. The Adam McGee episode with Kyle Carr, third place, with Ty Windish and Riley Feldman just off the metal sand as far as some other episodes where I just talk by myself. But I'm really proud of that episode. And if you're listening now and for whatever reason haven't listened to the Mr. Tom O'Grady episode, I would suggest you check that out. I feel like some scoops even came out of that one. So check that out again. And then by all means, if you like the podcast, go ahead and share it, because, you know, nobody's getting paid off this. Let's just kind of bop around. So what's going on? Before we talk about the Bucks, let's get right into it now. You know, pessimism is a thing that's kind of like a warm blanket for Bucks fans. I am not a pessimist by nature. I don't think I'd like to be an optimist about these kind of things. But, you know, pessimism, is that right? It becomes like this emotional hedge where you suspect things are going to go wrong. So when things go wrong, you say, well, I knew it. And certainly that's how I feel about Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe. And I'm starting to get that way about Budenholzer too. But I think the thing that kind of happens is kind of this classic sports thing where you want to love the players. So now when the rubber meets the road, like, I have a desire to blame everything on the coach. And throughout the bubble, after a good couple of years, almost two complete years of me just enjoying the Budenholzer experience, certainly compared to Prunty Kid, George is getting upset a little bit. But we'll see how it goes. But the bubble games have been incredibly disappointing. And we just don't execute well. We don't execute well at the end of games. Now, some things happen that are positive over the course of the game with the offense. I think everybody would agree with that. Our rim protection still mostly looks good, and you can say that people aren't playing hard. I don't know why, but this bad execution, look, they're away from their homes in a bubble. They don't have anything to do but plan and plot. And I just don't understand the kind of the Bucks Twitter consensus. Well, these games don't matter. Right? Fine. But 3-5 is unacceptable. 3-5 is unacceptable if the Bucks are going to go anywhere. And so I think we'll just have to see how this goes. We'll just have to see that. Now, can a switch be flipped? I don't think we have a switch to flip, personally. I think the team can play a lot better. But we weren't this high executing. You know, we had this historic aspect to a lot of the offense and a lot of the way we were playing. But I just don't. Well, because here's the thing. I was thinking about the Spurs, kind of like the 2014, 2013, those good Spurs team. Before Parker fell off, where Parker was still really quick and smart and a floater anytime he wanted it. And, you know, the really good were Duncan was on the downside, but still excellent. You had Ginobili and all those shooters and the way the ball just moved. And yeah, it's not the same offense, but that ain't the Bucks. That's not the Bucks right now. Bledsoe seems less muscular. I don't know that should necessarily translate to meaning a whole lot one way or the other, but it's noteworthy. We'll get to Chris Middleton later, I'm sure. But the team doesn't look right. So, hey, the bubble's over. Nobody really got hurt in the bubble. And, yeah, Bledsoe and Pat were coming off COVID and apparently symptomatic COVID, I think, at least in Connaughton's case. So yeah. I would just like to be positive about this team. I really would. And currently I am not positive about this team. And I'm scared to death of the Heat. So here's the Kyle Korver quote. On all the teams I've been on, I've always found this is when there's a turning point for a team. You either take this and you move towards better, you move towards good, or you can go the wrong way. I'm not going to say that we are at that point, but we are certainly close. Emphasis mine. I believe in the character of our group. I think we have a bunch of guys who want to do the right thing. I believe in our culture, and I think we are going to figure it out. So what does this mean? Anything that we say would be just speculation. I'll just say what I think. Because it's easy to see. It'd be an easy thing and an oversimplification to say, well, there's no leadership. Here's what I think. The thing with Giannis is, he's still kind of learning basketball. I don't really think he'll ever. I think he'll probably master basketball when he's on the downside of his prime. I think he'll finally figure out all the little tricks and stuff he can do literally when he's like 32. I think he will. He just didn't play basketball long enough growing up. And he's still just, you know, running people over, stepping past people, and doing all these kind of things. Now, of course, it's awesome to have him as a player. He's going to be the deserved two-time MVP, and he's probably going to get Defensive Player of the Year. But the thing is, what you want as a team, especially in the East, you want an accountable level of basketball. And there, it's hard for the Bucks. It's just my speculation. It's hard for the team to be accountable when you, like, Shaq teams were like this a little bit. So you have, on the one hand, this dominant player who's dunking on everyone and making these moves and blocking these shots, and he's just so important and valuable to the team. Can anybody yell at him for the technically weak things that he does? Can anybody really get on him for his free throw misses? Well, no, it's hard to, right? Because he means he's 70% of the team. He just means so much, right? But so then what happens? What happens is he can't really yell at Chris for turning the ball over, or Bledsoe for doing Bledsoe things, or, you know, or Brooke for taking a 30-foot shot with 20 seconds left on the clock because he's not making his free throws. Like, how could Giannis say anything to anyone when he can't make his free throws, right? Middleton can make his free throws, and yes, he's, you know, seemingly averaging 5 turnovers now, but like, it, so it just becomes this kind of thing. And this was seen, and this is not a Shaq Kobe situation for a lot of reasons, primarily because Middleton's not Kobe, but there just becomes, when there's such a separation of talent and a separation of different skills amongst players, then it becomes hard if the leader of the team can't lead by example. And I'm not even really saying he doesn't lead by example. I just wonder if that's what it means. Whereas, for example, lesser players, I don't want to make everything like a Michael Jordan kind of thing, because then you're talking about the most perfectly balanced player ever. But like, even like just great, great players like Chris, you think about a Chris Paul, right? For good and for bad, like, that's a guy who expected a lot from his teammates and backed it up and was there the driving force for everything. Giannis is sort of the driving force for most things with the offense and defense, but there's other things, and a lot of it just has to do with the nature of the offense, where I think the concept of the offense is that no one play is high leverage, but, you know, the math problem, the kind of Eric name, the math problem is just that over the course of the game, we're going to go on a run playing this way, but it doesn't seem to lend itself to playoff execution. But maybe I'm just overrating the 3-5 bubble stretch next to the stretch where they lost a bunch of games at, you know, right before COVID. So we'll see. But, you know, the playoffs are for teams that execute, like the Heat. And I guess, gun to my head, I still think we come out of the East, but it's not great, man. It's not great. And all the more reason, I don't want to talk about Middleton every episode. I don't want to talk about Brogdon versus Middleton or all these kind of things every episode. So let's not think of it in terms of Brogdon, right? Like, I think people, you can tell, because whenever Middleton has a couple good games and like all the trolls come out of the woodwork talking about this. My thing is, if it wasn't Brogdon, we need somebody else to be that guy. And it's not George Hill. We need a Draymond guy, or a Marcus Smart guy, or a Derek Fisher guy. We need a guy, or a Sam Cassell guy. We need another trenches guy. Like, a lot of these structural problems with this team would be fine if Eric Bledsoe was trenches guy, was like the guy you could trust in the trenches, like the dirt, the you know, the grimy guy, the tough shot guy. But he's not, right? Like, we can still use him for his defense, and it's kind of great. And maybe, you know, look, I think he'll get hot one game out of four, but we can't trust him in that way. We'd much rather have Marcus Smart now than Eric Bledsoe, and that's a crazy thing to say, because we need somebody else who's just executing on a level to win. And so that's kind of where it's at. So again, can we win? Yes, and you know, we'll see. But nothing about the end of these games against Dallas or Houston suggests we're ready to execute in the last 2 minutes. It might just work out. And I think what Bucks fans have to reconcile and really understand, and I had to come to understand this myself, is that the NBA, you know, minus the kind of Golden State stuff that took place where, you know, you have a team with five Hall of Famers or however many they had. Basically, what the league has turned into is two great players or two very good players or one and a half good players or two and a half good players. And everybody else just has to shoot every time they're open. And that's what the league has turned into. And obviously, I'm not saying anything revolutionary by saying this. You guys all understand this. And so what happened in the Celtics series last year? For example, one example, it's easy to say, well, Kyrie just tanked the Celtics, and that's certainly true. But what happened is Pat and George Hill got hot, and that was the difference. Like, sometimes that's going to play in our favor. And sometimes on the other end, Fred VanVleet. Although at a certain point, man, is Fred VanVleet just good? Is he just a very good guard now? Is he just, like, seemingly, right? Like, I picked Toronto to win, like, 54 games at the beginning of the season. I thought they'd be quite good, but I didn't think I'd fear them the way I fear Toronto now. But anyway, so yeah, the top two players, it becomes a team of two players. There's Harden and Westbrook, and there's George and Kawhi, and there's LeBron and Davis, and then everybody else just better shoot when they're open, and that's what the league has turned into, which is another reason. Side point, I feel like the misunderstanding of this fact is I didn't really understand why Mirotić didn't come back, and you know, Mirotić, bad against the Raptors also, certainly bad against the Raptors. But it just, you know, maybe the money didn't work out. Maybe he wanted to go back home. I do think defensively, not great. And, you know, if he's playing Giannis' position, sort of, then that becomes a thing. I mean, Mirotić as an idea. There's nothing to say that if we didn't have Mirotić for 3 years, one of those years, he wouldn't have been the hero of one of these series. Because it's all random. Brook Lopez proves this. All this stuff proves this. They're these truly elite shooters, these Devin Booker kind of Bradley Beal, super duper elite shooters. And everybody else is just chucking them up. And they might go 3 for 4, they might go 1 for 4, but who knows? It's rolling the dice. And the opposing defenses are going to try to take your best player, your best couple players away. And they're going to try to make that fifth and fourth man beat you. And so, no duh, right? Of course, you already know this. I did have this epiphany a couple of weeks ago where, like, I was so mad about the Raptor series for so long because I just knew, just mad about the Raptor series. I knew Middleton wasn't being trusted and all this kind of stuff, and we were so close, and if we'd have won Game 3, and when you watch Game 3 again, man, we were so close. Right before the overtime, and the overtime could have went differently. It's really heartbreaking, but I knew, you know, but I was screaming the whole year that we should have upgraded. We should have tried to get Kawhi. We should have done this. We should have done that. Yada, yada, yada. But what I really had to come to understand, and I forget what bubble game made me understand this, when you really break it down, the Raptors were better than us last year. And I think we just have to accept that now. That if you go right down the list, and like, you know, just the, kind of this thought, because I think we're so invested in the Giannis Kool-Aid, rightfully, that I don't think we necessarily look at stuff with clear eyes. But Kawhi outplayed Giannis. But even if you want to, you know, on one leg, kind of. But even if you want to call it a wash, just look at the roster. Like, if you look at the rosters, then you've got Middleton and Siakam, or however you want to look at it. You can say Middleton and Lowry. Either way, Middleton didn't show up in the series. But, you know, I don't remember Siakam necessarily playing that great. But just go right on the list. So you've got Gasol, an older Gasol, but defensive player of the year Gasol, versus Gasol and Ibaka versus, you know, Brook and kind of quasi Giannis, you know, backing it up. And so Gasol, guess what I'm saying? Gasol, Lowry, Siakam, Ibaka were better than Giannis, Chris, Brogdon, with Bledsoe being a negative. And then when Fred VanVleet was a flamethrower, like, the Raptors beat us. And, like, I don't know why I just understand that now. And that's why I'm still scared of the Raptors now. Because even without um, even without Kawhi, there are a lot of questions still. Now, gun to my head, I think the Bucks come out of the East, but these are the things I'm scaring it. And so these things should have been apparent. And then again, I really hate railing against the nerds. And I understand the nerds is a pejorative, and I don't really mean this. And if you're listening to this, just assume I'm not talking about you. But if you were invested in Chris Middleton getting 50, 40, 90 in the middle of this, you're the problem, as far as I'm concerned. But you know what? Engage with sports however you want to. Just for me, it was insane to me that an individual could be a Bucks fan and observe all these things and observe choking away the Rockets game and the Mavericks game and all these other things. And again, Giannis, the headbutt gate, the headbutt wasn't really a headbutt, but it's stupid, right? Again, dark side of the force, stupid. Passion, emotion, you know. And you could watch all these things and then right at the end, to get your old, like, old, stale, crusty takes off, be like, this is the 50-40-90 game. And, like, don't you watch sports? Like, the 73-win Warriors didn't win anything, and the 18-0 Patriots didn't win anything. And again, so what? Like, can he have 50-40-90 and us also win a championship? Sure, fine. And if he'd have got it in the course of the game, great. Right? I actually wanted him to get it. Because I think, ultimately, I'm still a Bucks fan. For us to have back-to-back 50, 40, 90 guys is kind of cool. But what happened? We had a game without Giannis, and we were playing the Grizzlies, last seed in the East, or last seed in the West. And he played scared. He choked it away. He overpassed. He tried to only get shots that would get it to him. He started out 0-3, I think, or 1-5, or something like that. And people kept saying, this is such a shame for Chris. He played so hard, man. He's so underrated. He's such an underrated guy, man. Nobody appreciates what he does for the Bucks. He's so underrated. And it's like, dog, the playoffs are starting Tuesday. Am I the one who's crazy? The playoffs are starting Tuesday, and people and Chris Middleton decided to basically have like a preseason game where he was playing for kicks, and he blew it. So, like, the whole games don't matter crowd. Like, it's the opposite of the Jordan meme, right? It's like, well, we didn't take this personally at all. You know, people were saying we're a paper, especially because all the media is constantly talking about we're a paper champion and Giannis is going to leave and all this kind of stuff. Like, you'd think the team would have the competitive fortitude to have a chip on their shoulder. But again, I'm just thinking they're not that good, a lot of them. But it's the bubble. I mean, just go back and forth on this stuff, clearly. But yeah, I just like it's counter to sports. Like, I keep hearing like about how the Bucks are like a playoff team even without Giannis. The team's so good without, you know, George Hill. Like, that's the thing too. Like, when George Hill was hitting 47% of his threes, every nerd in the world should have been like, sample size, but somehow we didn't. And so that came back down to earth too, because George Hill isn't a 45% shooter from three. It'd be nice in the playoffs. He could be 40%. That'd be awesome. That'd be great. But yeah, so like back to back, like, and then so Bucks fans were so nouveau riche that then the Suns go 8-0 or 9-0 or whatever it was. I forget. I think, was it 9-0? Whatever. The Suns were undefeated in the bubble. And for some kind of way, this was something for Bucks Twitter to look down upon, that the Suns, well, they should have won more games before, or that, you know, Ayton shouldn't have been on roids. And it's like, you know, the Suns and the Blazers, and to a lesser extent the Grizzlies, but a lot of these teams, all these teams really showed something as far as the love of the game and the professionalism, as far as people showing up and playing hard. And especially the Suns just exemplified everything that we love about sports. And for some reason, like, can Bucks fans make fun of the Suns? Like, do you remember the 24-1 t-shirt? I remember the 24-1 t-shirt. Maybe I'm the only one who remembers the 24-1 t-shirt. If Michael Redd or Ray Allen did this, we'd still be talking about it. About a legendary 8-0, 9-0 run in the bubble where we were the talk of the NBA for how well we were playing, despite the possibility we wouldn't even get in. They greased it for Zion, but somehow we got in. We'd still be talking about it. That's who Bucks fans are. That's who we've been for 30 years. And somehow we can make fun of the Suns when we're showing up in the bubble and playing like it doesn't matter. So that rubbed me the wrong way. But ultimately, you know, whatever. And that's the other thing, too. This is also tied into the viability of smaller markets, right? Like, only one team wins the championship. And the journey, like, the journey has to matter. You know, only one team gets to win, but, like, these moments have to resonate. And we understand this with March Madness. Like, it's not really about the team that goes all the way. A lot of times it's about the team that shouldn't have won the first game that gets to, you know, the Elite Eight. And so, again, I'm not saying that any of this necessarily matters. It probably doesn't matter. How we feel as fans doesn't matter. But we're kind of acting like we won something already. We choked away our chance last year. This is our last chance. And I feel like maybe people don't realize that. And we're not going to, whatever happens in the Magic against the Orlando Magic isn't going to prove anything anyway. So, but those are my anxieties. But again, you know, being anxious as a Bucks fan is a warm blanket. Happiness is worrying about the Bucks. And the rest of it, we'll just see. We'll just see. I think, how great would it be if some kind of way the Pacers, I don't think the Pacers can beat us really without injury. And it'd just be awesome. Like, I all the annoying Brogdon subplots aside, if some kind of way the Pacers could beat the Heat, that'd be great. Because we don't match up well with the Heat is all. And gun to my head, I might take the Heat. I just feel like they're going to win every close game. And by the way, we don't have home court. But that's enough. I mean, man, I've talked about this for a little bit. I feel like this is the kind of podcast where you can come for the real and not for people just saying empty things that they don't believe. These jersey slogans are awful, man. These jersey slogans are an abomination. Like, but again, this is Adam Silver. Adam Silver, I understand why they feel like they want to negotiate something political. They should have thought it through better. I did very much enjoy a couple of weeks ago, Jimmy Butler making everything all about him, which is classic Jimmy Butler. Like, well, if I can't have no name, I guess I'm just going to have my name. But like, make this whole thing about this one thing that he wanted to do. Nobody would care about my name. But by the way, you do know my name because I'm Jimmy Butler. I'm, you know, destroyer of worlds. And so that was amusing. But I mean, again, these are athletes, not necessarily the smartest guys on average, but it just, like, I can't believe they were negotiating this and no one said, all right, so look, what are we going to do about everyone who's number four? Like, did that not come up in any meeting? Like, Paul Millsap's jersey literally says vote for Millsap. Like, nobody thought about that. Nobody thought about the bad puns. Nobody thought about the people whose name, who just had the slogan enough, and now so it's like enough Zubac on the back of their jersey. Nobody thought about that. Like, it's so, then we got some players who don't have any slogans, so they got the name underneath the number also. Then we got some, the vast majority of the team have the slogan on top, then the number, then the name below. You know, not a political podcast, so I'll keep saying that, but counterproductive and weird, right? And then so then you also have the thing where, like, one of the slogans is like say her name, but then below it is like Mitchell, so it's like say her name Mitchell. Seems suboptimal to me, but what do I know. We also got in Jersey news the Toon Squad, some sort of mini teaser. I'm not a fan. I don't even think it looks awful, but again, like, it's kind of weird that they didn't get this movie done a couple of years ago before, like, Wash LeBron. But I don't care anything about Space Jam with LeBron James. You'd think he'd be wanting to blaze his own trail, but he's apparently just going to continue to show everybody how he doesn't stack up to Michael Jordan. But I didn't care for the jersey is really the point. What else? Bubble continues to seem stable from a medical perspective, which is super great news. It would seem that baseball is maybe getting their stuff together as far as that goes too. I'm not a scientist nor a medical professional, nor do I understand the most basic things about this. How are there no false positives in the bubble? Are they getting false positives and they're just not reporting them? Like, how does that work? is, maybe the nasal test is that much more accurate, but I thought like 4% of all tests are either false positives or false negatives, depending on this or that. Maybe that was earlier, but I wonder if they're just burying it and just being like, well, take another couple tests until it comes out right. And it's like, best 2 out of 3, best of 5. I don't know, but that just didn't seem right to me. But the point is, the bubble seems pretty stable. Ty Windish, a recent guest of the podcast, is going to be a virtual fan, I believe, for Game 1 Tuesday. So look for Big Time Ty. Full disclosure, I also had an invitation to do that and couldn't quite make it, and then couldn't quite get my son in. But yeah, it's funny. We had a podcast ripping the creepy virtual fans, and now look for Ty Windish as a creepy virtual fan. So we'll look forward to that. What else? There's not much else. I mean, as I'm recording this now, I think seems like Porzingis was ejected from the Mavs game on something that appears really sketch. Again, Adam Silver, like, are they going to ever have meetings on this? Are they ever going to figure out that we don't want this flopping and we'd like the game to be officiated a certain way? I'd like to see. I wonder if they should start polling for that again. Because it's weird, because I'm sure they have documents on all this, on how they expect the officials to act. And just in the playoffs, things are just differently because people are just screaming at the officials on the road. And I wonder if, like, I don't think fans signed up for this kind of Pollyannish level of basketball. Although, again, the effort from the players that aren't Milwaukee Bucks has been quite excellent. I think people are flying around and really, really, really looking good. But I think we as fans demand a certain level of competitive, just an advancement of the kind of the competition, the officiating. We want more stuff to be allowed, and we just want the playoffs to feel like the playoffs. And there's some tweaks that need to be done with that. I still, even when this benefits Chris, or perhaps because it benefits Chris, that's kind of the other thing too, not to go back to Middleton, but like, I think he's, we saw this in the Heat game. I think he's become much more effective. It's allowed him to level off a lot of his efficiency that he's getting these garbage calls, these pump fake calls. And I still think, of course, I'm still going to find a way to be critical about this. These are first half calls. I think every time this doesn't work, it goes the other way for a dunk. But I think he should continue to weaponize this in the first half. But again, everything continues to be so weird. Like, that's not the kind of call you get on the road, but everyone's on the road, so the officiating will be a work in progress. So I've gone a half hour anyway. Some other stuff I probably wanted to get to, including people whose opinion I don't necessarily respect on Twitter. Thinking up dumb trades for the Bucks to get Bradley Beal, and then saying, I don't want Bradley Beal, I don't trust his defense, and then getting like ratioed for it and then backpedaling. But hey, whatever. By the way, I put out a tweet earlier. I don't even really want to get into this, but again, I think that what we continue to see, the way I think people have continued to misevaluate kind of the junior level stars, the stars on the way up. And this goes back to Jason Tatum. This is Donovan Mitchell. This is Booker. This is going back to Lillard or CJ or all these guys. A real easy way to evaluate these young players is either they have this other level or they don't. And all of those guys, going back to Kyrie, any of these guys, now you watch their career progress. In a case, a guy like Kyrie may be a cancer that you might rightfully decide isn't worth it. But like, all these people wanted to dunk on Jason Tatum. I said 2 podcasts ago, I'm terrified of Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum showed me he could ball, and he could ball way before that Lakers game where he had 40 points or whatever that Sunday game. But like, when people can do that, you take notice, because it means something. It means a lot more than having 51 points against the Wizards or 38 points in a loss in a game you were never in against the Suns. But I digress. But all those guys are coming, and you know, whether Mitchell ever becomes a like true difference maker is great, but like, you put Donovan Mitchell on the Bucks, I'd be interested in that. I'd certainly be interested in Devin Booker on the Bucks. Those were the kind of people. I'm again, been saying this about Middleton for 3 years. The thing with Middleton was you always wanted to sell high on him because people thought he was better than he is, and now we're going to see how good Chris Middleton is.
because whether Giannis plays good or bad, he's going to have 27-11. And he's probably going to go 6-for-11 from the free throw line every game. And every time Giannis goes to the hoop, people are going to fall down. And it's going to be super duper unfair. And we're all going to be mad about it. And I'm going to be mad about it. But the truth is, now it's time for the counterpunch. And Budenholzer has had a whole year to think about how he failed us too. And so this is not your playoff preview, but just some things that I had on my mind as I sit here in Crystal Palace. So we will probably do another podcast in a couple of weeks or if any big news jumps off. Again, thank everybody for the support. Apologize for this kind of janky recording style to the phone. Hopefully it turns out all right. If not, I'll delete it and you'll never hear this. But thanks. Later.